You have to pick a movie for you to live in forever. And you have to pick a movie for your worst enemy to live in. I don't know if you have a worst enemy, but just pick someone. You have to pick someone you dislike.
I mean, Michael Bay is my worst enemy. I hate him.
Oh, no, he's awful. Him and Snyder share a lot of similarities, by the way.
Yeah.
God.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I hate both of them. I think it's going to be poetic because for my worst enemy to live in, I'm going to pick a Michael Bay movie.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to 1,000 Crazy Questions, the podcast. I'm your currently sane host, Houston Pierce. This is a podcast where I have at least one guest a week and ask them a series of crazy would you rather questions. We get to the second of our guests, support topics and questions that maybe shouldn't have been explored. I take my questions from you, listener, from a list of 1,000 questions. You can submit questions, suggestions at me at 1kcrazyquestions@gmail.com or at 1000crazyquestions on Instagram. That's 1000 on Instagram. And your social media username and whatever will get a shout out if your question makes the episode. And yeah, you could please rate and follow 1000 Crazy Questions, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, and Spotify, wherever else podcasts are found. More about Podchaser at the end of the show. And yeah, let's get into the episode this week. This week, we have with us writer, director, actor, and cinema student from Iran, Mr. Ali Kamseh. Ali.
Yeah.
Crap, I said it wrong. Damn it. This whole time.
No.
Before we were like, oh, yeah, how do I say the last name? And then I mess up the first. Ali, if you want to tell us the listeners.
Hello, everyone. I am Ali, and it's completely understandable. Don't worry about it. Honestly, one of the weirdest things, like when I first was learning English and I was looking up my name online, I realized that Ali in English is short for Allison. And apparently it's a girl's name. So I didn't know that, which was one of the many cultural differences.
So I did get it right, but my mind was like, no, it couldn't be Ali because that'd be, you know, because that's a girl's name over here. So I was like, it's probably Ali because that's how it would be pronounced over here. If, like, if I saw this, you'd, like, wait, Ali? No, Ali? Prince Ali. I think Ali is the way I would pronounce it.
Yeah, I think they tried to make a difference, but like the exact pronunciation is the girl's name. It's Ali.
Ali.
If someone in Persian wants to call me, they usually say just Ali. But yeah, it is a girl's name, so people usually say Ali to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understandable. Honestly, it's made in a completely different cultural background. I completely understand that.
There's going to be, I feel like there's going to be a couple cultural like differences here. Because when we get into the questions, there's so many things that are, you just find out like, oh, this is different over here. When you start talking about random things, I find it's like the best way to find out, oh, that means something completely different.
Yeah, I completely understand.
Yeah. But Ali, if you want to, you know, tell listeners a bit about, you know, yourself, what you do fun and professionally.
Well, I do movies for fun and professionally. I am a cinema student, as you mentioned. I am studying for my master's at the moment. My master's thesis is about Western, spaghetti Westerns, which are my favorite genre of movie. I'm not kidding. I love spaghetti Western. My favorite movie of all time is The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Which is honestly one of the weirdest movies ever. I'm sorry, it's completely tangential, and feel free to cut this part out, but it's Italian movie made by Italian directors starring American actors made in Spain about American Civil War. And I mean, it's a fantastic movie. It's so good. If you haven't seen it, I know a lot of people don't see it because it's made in 1966. But honestly, fantastic movie. It's 32 years older than me, and I think it's the best movie ever made.
Wow, that's awesome. No, I understand. I get it. But it is a weird movie. I know like some history of that movie, but unfortunately, I hate saying this because it just completely discredits, because I do love film, but I have not seen the actual film. So it sucked. I want to speak more to it, but I know its reputation, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's kind of funny. Sorry, if again, these are completely tangential things. It has the most famous soundtrack for Western movies, which is the famous ah, wow,
Yes. Yeah,
wow.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's so
Yeah.
funny because spaghetti Western was supposed to be an insult. Like a lot of critics call these movies spaghetti Western because they were cheap Italian-made westerns. They weren't real cinema. And suddenly, a spaghetti western is the most famous sound you associate with westerns. I just find it poetically ironic.
Wow. I didn't know that's where the term. That's cool. Whoa. That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, because like it's like a badge of like honor. I was like wearing the
Yeah.
boy. Yeah, but that's cool. Shoot, yeah,
Yeah.
and no need to apologize. But there's plenty of tangents here.
Great.
This is all tangent zone. It's everything. It's all tangents.
Great. I am a tangential person.
Cool. I'm gonna explain the rules of the game to the listeners.
There are two rules to this game slash conversation. Rule number one, you must always answer the question no matter what. If you have no preference towards one or the other, you say the phrase flip a coin, meaning that each choice is 50-50 to you and that one is neither worse bet than the other. But that rarely happens, so it may not get used. Rule number two, whoever asks the question doesn't have to answer it if they choose not to. These rules exist because as the questions become harder to answer, the rules become harder to follow.
This week we have a Red Band episode, so the questions asked and topics discussed will maybe not be family friendly. If you want to check out the blue version of this podcast, where the questions are a bit more PG and whatever, and you're that type of person, check those out. And I encourage you to stay here, but check them out depending on your own sensibilities. Ali, just want to remind you, if you have any different questions for me or variations of the question I've asked, this is a conversational podcast. You are never interrupting. Quick but important disclaimer to the listeners: everything is hypothetical. If you are offended by this episode, that's too bad. I'm sorry. You can at me. Sorry, but hey, you chose to listen. And lastly, before we begin, Ali, is there anything that you like to ask or declare, and any inherent slash mental biases you may have?
I mean, I'm looking forward to it, and just because it's a red episode, fuck.
Let's go. Question number one. Would you rather have the best musical skills and cooking skills, or have the best photography skills and athletic skills? So these are like package deals.
I mean, to be honest, if it's not obvious by the way I look, I'm not very athletic. And more importantly, I never strove to be athletic. I really hate sports. I really do. So,
What?
musicals, yeah. I genuinely like one of the things that are very prominent, especially in my country, is football or soccer.
Yeah.
I've never seen a match completely, like the full 90 minutes of it.
Whoa.
I can't do it.
Really? Oh, well, I
Yeah.
mean, okay, because like I get it if you're not into sports, but you don't like them at all. Like it's completely like what? Like is it a disdain or a disinterest?
It's disinterest, it's not disdain. I don't hate them. I just never found myself intrigued to like go and watch a sporting event. The closest I've come to was when I was like a decade younger, was WWE. I used to watch.
Okay.
But
Yeah.
even then, I used to watch for The Undertaker, nothing else. I didn't used to like follow matches. Every time Undertaker was on, I was happy. The next, I didn't care.
Man, okay, that's cool. I'm sorry, I'm interested in this, but what about like tabletop sports or X game sports, like let's say like ping pong or skateboarding, or things that are swimming, like the Olympics? How do you feel about
To be honest, okay, this is gonna make me sound like such a nerd, and it is true. I only watched the opening and closing ceremony of the Olympics.
Yes. That's pretty nerdy. I'm sorry. Not the worst thing I've ever heard on here. That's the nerdiest thing, but that is something.
Yeah. Like 2012 London Olympics is the one I have the most memories of. And I was watching the opening ceremony. Oh my God, it's Mr. Bean. Oh my God, it's Paul McCartney. It's directed by Danny Boyle, and then the sports center, and I'm like, no, I'm not interested in it. I'm you've lost. Tell me when Eric Idle shows up. I come back then.
Wow. And, okay.
But funnily enough, you mentioned swimming. I actually, I'm a swimmer. Like, I used to swim quite a lot, and even like got some local Providence level, like, nominations, but even then I just like the feeling of weightlessness. It's not the sports that interested me. I just liked being in the water.
But the question that would help you with swimming, I mean, you can then compete, you know, because like you already sort of like it. It would make you better. And if I put photography on that side, so that would most help with your, you know, with film.
Definitely. But here's another thing. I usually, I'm a writer director, I usually leave the picture to the like director of photography.
Got it.
So yeah, but on the other side, I love food and I love music. So on the other side, it's just bigger for me. Like, I do want that. I want to be able to sing and I want to be able to make great food.
Yeah, no, I got it. It makes sense. This is slam dunk for you. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I pick music and food too. I was just making an argument, but I devil's advocate always, but I love music and nothing beats food. Athletic. I like to go out and play sports in general. I don't follow, but I do like to play them. And funny enough, tomorrow is actually the Super Bowl over here in America. Oh. Funny enough, by the time this comes out, Super Bowl will have been passed. But just so happens that tomorrow, like, you know, the American football, the biggest thing for them. I think it's the 49ers and the Chiefs for anyone. In case anyone listening who cares, whatever. But we already know the results at this point. But yeah, I don't know. It'd be cool to me if I could just go onto a field and compete at professional level.
I understand. I do understand the appeal of it. I'm not gonna lie. I've been to the stadium once, which was for a volleyball game. And I didn't hate the experience, but I didn't love it either, because I was like more interested in the atmosphere of it than the actual sport.
Yeah.
But I do understand the appeal of it, I'm not gonna lie. But it's not for me, that's what I can say.
Yeah.
But you mentioned music, and is it okay if I insert a question here?
Okay, sure. Shoot.
I'm going to ask the most basic question possible. Give me your like top five favorite singers, not musicians, just singers, like people whose voice you love.
Oh man. You know, you said basic, but I've never been asked this question. That's hard actually. Cause people ask, you know, for artists, and that's more general, or your favorite songs. And that's impossible. But, voices, singers. Let me start at five. I gotta cut all this thinking time out because I had to think.
I mean, it doesn't have to be in order. Like, you can go at any order. You don't have to put them in order if you don't want them to. Like,
okay.
Just five.
Oh, man. The lead singer of Journey. I forgot his name,
Oh, yeah, I know
but that
him.
guy's a great singer, and when those high notes are pretty crazy. He's like five. Sam Cooke. I really like a great singer. Like I like his voice. Maybe like number four. Honorable mention to Louis Armstrong. Is it Louis Armstrong? The guy who sing like this.
Louis
Rose
Armstrong.
is cool. Yeah. Because that this may not be a pretty voice, but I love it. And
He's actually in my top five as well. I love him so much.
distinct. I want to put another honorable mention. Maybe she's just on the list because she could sing. Mariah Carey, that they're so high. It's freaking high, and it's pretty sounding. And maybe she's tied with Whitney Houston. I remember Whitney Houston could sing. And number one, because it's tied to my childhood, because I was raised on this person, and not because I was born in the 80s, but just because my mother made me not made, but played it all the time in the house. And I idolized this person for good and for bad because of how prominent they were, Michael Jackson. And I feel bad saying it because we all know what's happened afterwards, but I have a soft, I have a very obvious open soft spot for Michael Jackson. Some of my favorite songs, Michael
Yeah,
Jackson's.
I completely understand that. Those are great choices.
Sorry. Yeah, no. How about
I
you? Yeah.
completely understand. Oh, I mean, I'm not gonna like these are people whose voices I love. They may not be good voices, but they are voices that I love. Louis Armstrong is one of them. Leonard Cohen, who I really love. The next one again, as you said, I wasn't born in the 1940s, but I love a lot of 1940s singers. I like Frank Sinatra
Oh, that's
and
a
Nat
good
King
one.
Cole.
Those are good. Those are good choices.
Thank you.
No, I forgot about Sinatra. Yeah, very smooth. The crowler. You'd call him a crowler. Yeah, those voices.
And the fifth one is David Bowie, because I mean, I know he doesn't have a good voice per se, but just the way he sings, like the accent alone is enough.
Man, those are good choices. No, and I get it. I get it. Like sometimes the distinct voice is just different. If we're going, this is tangent road, by the way, but have you seen, there's a documentary on Netflix called The Greatest Night in Pop. May not be, I don't know if it's out in Persian Netflix. Maybe it is, but
We don't have we don't have Persian Netflix, but I do
yeah,
have access to
I know that very,
some.
I've said that very broadly. Because I know it's like an area, it's not a thing, it's not a, but yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. I actually have seen the poster of it. I know it's about We Are the World recording, and I haven't seen it yet, but it is on my watch list. Like I've written it down so I can go and watch it, but I haven't seen it yet. Is
Okay, I
it
won't.
good or not?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, it's exactly what I thought it was going to be. I was sitting on the couch and there was a moment where I had nothing else to do. You know, when you have sort of odd spaces of time where you don't have anything to do, but you're too lazy to go do anything productive, and you can't. You know, it was one of those moments, those rare moments. And I was like, oh, okay, here, all right, this I have to what you know this well, this will fill an hour. You know, and I watched it, and it. It was just as good as I thought it was going to be. I mean, it's a documentary about We Are the World documentary. It's very, you know, very, it just shows you how it was made. And it turns out this isn't a spoiler, but Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson, the two people who wrote the song. And I didn't know that. I thought it was maybe a Stevie Wonder or something like, but I mean, Stevie Wonder was there and, but he actually showed up late and he actually showed up late. He's like, he came up, I'm going to write the song. And like, Stevie, we already wrote it because no one could reach him for a week. And it just showed you how much work went into it. And just the issues and, you know, how great it came together. and it was all for this great cause. And no, it was really good. And the song was stuck in my head. I mean, it was our, we all know it's a good song, but it was stuck in my head. And the solos, with hearing it all patched up, and all the different voices and the personalities working together. I won't give the documentary more praise. It gives the song enough praise. I'm not going to do that, but I would recommend it.
I mean, this is again tangential, but one of the things I love about We Are the World is everyone is singing, like, these are beautiful voices. Stevie Wonder, Lionel Richie, Kenny Loggins, Kenny Rogers, Billy Joel, Willie Nelson, who I love. And suddenly, at the end of it, you have the nasally voice of Bob Dylan. And I love the man. I love Bob Dylan. But that guy, and he sings off rhythm, off key. And it's just so funny. Anytime I watch that video and it gets to his part, I'm like, okay, here comes the frog. And he sings.
You know, it's funny.
And like,
sorry, you were saying.
It's no. It's so fun because they ended after him. It's Ray Charles, who has a great voice. I'm like, okay, why Bob Dylan is even there? I know he was a big deal. He still is a big deal. He's one of the few who hasn't died yet. But
yeah.
I don't know why.
He's when you watch the documentary, I almost guarantee you'll be cheering for Bob Dylan because it shows you his uncomfortableness in that room. He wasn't a people person. He's standing right behind Ray Charles, and he's like, you know, and they show him in the chorus, and he's like, if there was some way to isolate just his voice in the chorus, it'd be. But then they somehow get a solo out of him, and I do mean somehow. You have to watch a documentary, and you're like, okay, yeah, good. You're like, good for you, you know. Like in the you're like, they did it, you know.
Yeah, I have to watch it. I'm gonna move it up the list a little bit.
Okay, yeah, no, it's good. And well, okay, we'll move on to this question. Talk about music forever. Honestly, this could be a music podcast. Well, all right.
I would love that too.
All right. Next question. Would you rather make the greatest movie of all time? And don't know how you feel about this, but you can't ever have kids if you do that. Or have a kid that will 100% go on to cure cancer.
Okay. This is going to be philosophical in nature, I think.
Okay.
Honestly, it comes down, it's basically my life philosophy that, I have to think about it a little bit.
It's
going to be hard because I'm assuming, it's not in the question, but I'm assuming if I have a kid who cures cancer, I'm not going to be very well known for my movies. Is that correct? Even make movies.
Yes, I'm sorry that I should clarify that. I'm glad you mentioned it because in the second part, your dreams will not fully be realized or fulfilled. Like, I mean, I guess no one's gonna stop you, but it's just that it's not gonna work in a general sense. Yeah,
yeah, it's gonna remain in obscurity. I get.
Mm-hmm.
Well, honestly, and I guess it comes down to recognition, and I just love making movies and telling stories, and I also do want to have a kid. That is like one of the things I imagine for my future self. Not right now, I'm too young for that, but imagine for my future self is having a family and having a kid who I can make a better world for.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can, or she, or they can make a better world, so much better. So I'm gonna go with number two again. The last one was number one. Sorry, why again? I'm gonna go with number two and say that I'd rather have a kid who's gonna cure cancer, and then I'm gonna make a dozen movies that nobody will ever see. Which, I mean, to be honest, is the trajectory that my life is going at the moment.
Oh man, don't say that. Don't. If you don't have a kid yet, so you can still make the greatest movie of all time. That's
And then
something.
like get hit in the balls so hard that I'm never gonna have a kid at the like award ceremony for
Yeah, you'll never. Like, you say, I need you to do me a favor. Like, I need you to kick me and make sure I can't have kids. Because I want to make the great. Okay, I understand your choice and I respect it because I like it. I simply respect it. But imagine the first one, if you will. The term greatest movie of all time. And that's all, that's past, present, future. That is the greatest. And that's not, that's world renowned. Like, that means everyone in the world will go, yeah, Ali made the greatest movie. Film, piece of cinema ever created. All right, and you're passing that up for
I
diapers.
kind of am.
Okay.
Well, honestly, yeah, because I am a little bit of an idiot and genuinely speaking, like then it comes to another question. What is the greatest movie of all time? Like if you ask me, I'm gonna say it's The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. But I can guarantee you, of the people who are listening to this, half of them, if they've seen it, are probably gonna say that's not even in the top 3,000 best movies of all time. And then it comes to that, and I don't think like I am serious. I don't think I'm gonna ever make a movie as good as The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. But that's again tangential. But it's because the cameras have changed, the attitudes have changed, the storytelling has changed, the way we perceive acting has changed. Like the way Eli Wallach acts in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is completely over the top by modern standards, where everything has become more understated. But since this movie is made in 1966, it's gonna be okay to watch it in that movie. And because of that, I don't think nobody will ever make the greatest movie of all time. That is my like this is the hill I will die on. Nobody will ever make the greatest movie of all time. They will make the greatest movie of their time. And even then, there will be lots of contenders.
I like that. I like that turn. I like the philosophical stand there. But we can still agree, even if there isn't a greatest film of all time, there's definitely a list. We have an archive of film that if, let's say, like, nuclear bomb is dropped, that we've put some film aside saying this is some of the best people have to offer, and we've put it in a vault somewhere, we've sealed the digital copy, and the like, we've saved some film to like as a as an as a marker for ourselves, and because of like as achievements. And Citizen Kane, I believe, is in there. Terminator 2 is in there.
The
Shrek is
Godfather is probably in there.
probably Shrek is even in there. Like, it's which, I think it actually deserves it. But it's a bit
I
weird, but
actually, I mean, Shrek is such a meme now that I don't know. It becomes diluted in that. Like when I want to talk about Shrek, I have to first say I'm not talking about the memes. I'm talking about the movie
yeah,
of the
no, yeah.
deconstruction of fairy tales. It's not about Shrek is love, Shrek is God.
Ugh, yeah, that was. Yeah, I remember the first time I saw that terrible video. Shrek is love, Shrek is life. That was awful. But yeah, no, I mean, but there are. You can get very close. Even if you we agree that there's not going to be a one, you can get very, very close. So, I mean, is it not tempting at all? I mean, I
It
don't
is
know.
tempting. Oh, it is definitely tempting. Last one was a slam dunk. This one is very much edging, like it's neck and neck. But at the end of the day, maybe it's just the way I was like raised culturally and like values of my parents and all of that. But I look at and like being a parent is probably one of the more important things I can do. It's completely traditionalist stuff with me, and I am one man that is in all forms against tradition.
But here you are picking the traditional answer.
Yeah, which is a paradox. I'm gonna have to live with myself now.
I got it. I gotcha.
I don't fucking recommend it.
It's funny though. Again, I actually agree with you. I'm just boxing the other side, but I agree with you. And having a kid is it's a main function of being human. Whether someone is religious or not, I think everyone agrees that, reproducing is it's part of the people experience. It's something. Yeah, it's it, there is an unspo there's a un understandable love for parent to child that only parents get, that only you can get if you actually have your own kid. Or and you can argue adoption, and I will not argue that. I understand, but there is something to reproducing or having a kid, someone who you can mold, put your dreams in, and everything that is you can't argue against. And the fact that they cure cancer seals it for me, because then I know I've helped out the world by doing my bare part of having fun for a second. Because oh yeah, you wouldn't have, cancer would still be around if I hadn't. I could take credit for that is what I'm saying. That's my son. That's my daughter. That's them. They cured cancer, and guess who made them? Me. So yeah, just yeah. And as
The
much yeah.
old joke, they came from my balls.
What's that one Logic song? Like, you know why you're so great? Because you came from my balls. Anyway, I don't know what song that. I didn't like the quote at first. It's funny enough.
But like, here's another thing, as you mentioned, I remember, but it's a dark joke that I used to make. And for people who have abandonment issues, it's like, I'm gonna create a human being who has no other choice than to love me. Like, they can't leave me because they have to love me because I am their parent. Which is, I know, I it's not it's a dark joke, but it's a joke, honestly.
It's a dark joke, but it's true for a couple of years. It's true for some years, and then they get old enough and they start having these ideas and opinions and whatever. And then they start questioning you. And then they can start deciding they don't like you or some garbage like. But you made them, so what right do you have to even start thinking that you don't like? Anyway, we'll move on. But where do you get the audacity to start thinking for your but we'll move on. Next question. In your opinion, what good are critics? And I mean like critics on the around the board, film critics, movie critics, food critics, whatever. Do we need them, and are they good for anything?
Well, I mean, that's a tough question. I'm not gonna lie. Okay, I'm gonna give it two answers. And one is as an artist, as someone who writes and makes movies. And the second is as a movie reviewer, because that is one of the things I used to do, especially in uni. I used to review movies for like websites and stuff like that. And I can tell you that as an artist, I can tell you no, we don't need them. An artist and the audience don't need an interpreter. If there needs to be an interpreter, it usually needs to be the audience themselves. Like, one of the things that I really love is David Lynch's answer. He was told that you did something, will you explain it? He said, no, it's in the movie. And I think that's the best answer you can give to, as an artist, to making a movie. It's like, yeah, I literally gave you Mr. Policeman, I gave you all of the clues, and it's all of there. And so the critic's job is mostly reactionary. I feel like they see something being made and then they react to it. But as a reviewer, I have to understand what is the appeal in them. And that is because time is a finite resource. And like, you don't have enough time to watch every movie ever made. You do not have time to eat at every restaurant ever made. You do not have time to listen to every song ever made or read every book ever made. So we basically designated a group of our citizens as a like collective society and told them, okay, your job is to read these, see these, eat these, and tell us, the general audience, which ones are worth it. And I'm not going to say there isn't any value in their work. There is some value. Some of them are actually good. Like some people, especially academic critics, do tend to help you understand even like how the movies are made and what are they saying better. But in general, it's just a... Okay, literally today, I was at a class and the professor said this, and it's completely true. It's about art in particular, but if all of the artists at the same time went on strike, they will not starve. All the critics will, because they don't have anything to react to.
I mean, when he says artist, does he mean like musical artists, I guess, or painters?
All of them, like every form of art, writer, a painter, decorator, architect, sculptor, all of them. If they went on strike, they know still how to and do not create anything new. Like no new form of art is made, no new art is made. They will still make copies and all of that. They will not starve. But critics don't create. That's the thing about them. They react. They don't, basically, they don't act, they react. And because of that, they will starve, because without art, there isn't a critic. And so I guess the question is, why do critics feel the need to be so snobby, even literally, without people who made art, they will not have a job?
I like it. It's harsh, but I like it. It's true. I mean, an artist, they make money by selling whatever art it is that they do, but a critic will never, like they only get money from that art being sold in the first place. And if it's not sold, you know, it's like cutting off the food chain sort of deal, and they have no way to do anything themselves. Yeah. That's interesting. Because I'm sort of a critic myself, my feelings are hurt. You've crushed me. I'm kidding. Like I said this up front, but I do want to get into film and everything. I would like to, you know, produce, direct, make, but also judging other people's stuff. Like there is something to at least, when I think of the purpose of a critic, I think their purpose is to, yes, allocate time and be like, this is worth it, this is not worth it, but also sort of be the, in the same way that you can look at the back of a piece of a cereal box or a can of vegetables and say, this is the nutrition facts for you. There is no one to really do that for film or art. Like you could, they're technically, they could turn the movie box around theoretically and say, these are the themes that are in this film, this is what's good. If you're looking for this type of movie that, you know, this is like good for you, this is good for your soul or good for your taste buds, you know, and this is like a movie, like to, like this is hypothetical, but I'm or theoretical, but it's like they'll tell you what to look for and or help you find what to look for. And like, not only is this, let's say, chock full of, I don't know, old, like the old school values of like what it means to be a hero or whatever, but it modernizes it for a way that you and your kids will like. Let's like a critic will be able to watch a film, take it apart, and then sell it back to the people and say, this is what they're trying to say. This is what you would enjoy. This is what you wouldn't enjoy. This probably wouldn't get, you know, and they take it down for the people. They make it digestible or more understandable. And I think that's an important part. I mean, especially for movies, food is a bit different. You can do it for food, but food speaks for itself a bit more. So I think they're useful in that sense of, yeah.
I mean, I completely understand what you're saying, but that becomes more analytical. I'm sorry. delves more into analysis. And that's the thing. Like, here's the problem I have with most critics, in the sense that they are critics. Like, they sit and talk about, this movie had bad acting in it. And I'm like, okay, I understand that. Maybe I agree or I disagree. First of all, here's the thing. No critic is objective. I understand the analytical sense of it. And that part, I'm actually completely okay with. Like, I feel like if you want to know more about a certain movie, you go and read about them. You go and watch people talk about them, video essays. I mean,
yeah.
Look at half of my YouTube subscriptions. They're to H. Bomber Guy or like Escape Intro or people like that who just, they do nothing than to overanalyze media. And I understand that part of it. The problem I have with, I think it's a clear, not clear, old school style of critic, like Roger Ebert. I love Roger Ebert. I know, don't get me wrong. I like some of his work. But the thing is that Roger Ebert called Blue Velvet a contrived movie. David Lynch's movie. Bring it back to David Lynch. And I'm like, okay, but all movies are contrived. Like, you're not giving me any information here. What did you find contrived in it? It's like he needed to write a 600-word passage for, I think he works for Chicago Sun at the time. And he just wrote the movie is contrived. I don't know if it hurt the sales of the movie or not. I don't think it was ever going to be that popular. It's David, via David Lynch movie. But when I look at it that way, I'm like, okay, that part of it, I understand why they exist. But there is this part of me that it's like, yeah, but if you weren't paid by the word, what would you say?
No, I get it. And I agree. I think... But I think that it's the job of a good critic, and Roger Ebert is a pretty good critic, but he could have, in this case, you know, like it, you could do better in terms of how you describe something. It's I think it's the critic's job to be objective. And yeah, people are not objective. I mean, it's naturally so, we are not. Everyone has biases, opinions. The mere fact that you are human, the mere fact that you were raised by someone else in some country means that you come with some form of bias, naturally. But I think it's a critic's job to be as objective as possible to break down a film. Now we're just talking about movie critics, but to break down a film enough to be like, I don't like this, or I like this, and... here's the reasons why I do or do not. And like, then the people can agree with the do or do nots, but they have to be as objective as possible to be like, this was for me, but this may not be for other people who do not like these things, or I hated this type of thing, but like other people who like this they'll appreciate this because this part was well done and this part was well done. Example I think of, like, for me, and we've been on this topic for a minute, so I swear I'm going to move on. But like, I don't like mashed potatoes, for instance, and that's kind of a weird detail about my life and food taste. But I love everything else potato related. I don't like mashed potatoes, and it's a consistency thing. But when I can still taste, and I think I have pretty good taste, and when I taste mashed potatoes, I can tell someone, oh, this is a pretty good bowl of mashed potatoes. Like, I can still give an opinion on it, even though I do not like the dish itself. You know, it's like, I can tell someone, yeah, this is good. I don't want it, but someone made great mashed potatoes here. If I were able to eat more of this, if I liked this thing, I'd be all over, but I don't. But I'm able to distinguish this is better than a bad one. You know, I don't know if that.
No, I completely understand. Here's what I personally have come to understand, especially in terms of movie critics. Truth is, as I said, you do not have time to watch all the movies, and these are people whose job is to watch them. So here's what I personally, my I used to do this back in the day when I was just starting watching movies. Nowadays, I just, ever since 2019 onwards, I've slowed down in movie watching. Like back in when I was 17 years old, I used to watch over 70 movies in a month, and they
Whoa.
blended together. Movies are my life. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. But here's what I've come up with is that just find the critics whose ideas and whose taste do you think more closely matches yours. For me, for example, that is Mark Kermode. I don't know if I'm mispronouncing his name. Mark Kermode is a British reviewer critic, and most of the movies that he likes, I tend to like as well. So if he says, go watch this movie, I'm gonna be like, well, maybe I'm gonna like it. For example, one of the movies that he really loved back in the day when I was watching his videos was Videodrome by David Cronenberg, who I had never seen before. And when I watched it, it's now in my top 100 movies of all time. I fucking love that movie. It scares me to my core, but I fucking love it. And I never would have known about it, or I would never have given it a chance without Mark Kermode. I'm sort of contradicting myself a little bit right now, but I guess critics at their best should be pathfinders, basically. They show you a way. Then they can analyze it and tell you what is good or what is not good. But their main objective, at least for me personally, and what I've tried to do whenever I've written a review, is just tell people, well, if you like this, you probably will like this. For example, I recently watched The Holdovers, which, by the way, one of the greatest movies of 2023. It's
Oh,
really good.
I have to see that. I couldn't see. I recently became part of this like film thingy where I can watch like three movies for free. Well, not for free because it's a service, but watch three movies in theaters if, like a week, and I'm cashing in on it. And I missed The Holdovers. I couldn't watch it. I'll watch it, but I missed it, the theatrical release.
I mean, the good thing about that movie in particular is, at least in my opinion, is it doesn't have that grandiose scale that you should watch it on a big screen. You can get the same effect watching it on a smaller screen. I think it was made to be to be played on TVs and stuff like that. And so when I want to tell people to watch it, I'm like, if you like Dead Poets Society, I believe you can like The Holdovers, because there is a lot of similar thematic things going on there. But The Holdovers is much more modern and much less sentimental than Dead Poets Society or other. It's a Christmas movie, or like it does have that core of Christmas movie, that heartwarming feeling, but it's also not very joyful. It's a little bit of a cynical movie, but it's a hopeful movie. It's not joyful, but it is hopeful. So if you feel like, oh, I like that, then you can go and watch it. That's the best thing the critic can do. I genuinely don't like it when critics become like Walter Winchell. Walter Winchell is a person that, if I was alive when he was, I think I would have been one of his, I would have punched him in the face.
I'm sorry, I don't know who Walter Winchell is, though, offhand, but.
Walter Winchell was an old radio personality back in 1940s, and his role was basically he positioned himself and was kind of, sadly, a tastemaker. Like he could create, like he could destroy Broadway shows just by talking about them badly. And yeah, you can imagine how easy it is to buy the word of a man who believes of himself as a tastemaker. Yeah, like Walter Winchell, I don't like. That kind of criticism, I don't like.
But you know what? I think there is a place for that. As much as I hate it, I would hate this too. Like there, I feel like there's those people, those heels who that society needs, you know, like the thing like that, someone to say that's awful, you know, like someone just so yeah, everyone needs, even if they're a villain, you know, someone to be like, I refuse to let everyone know, like, you're everyone watch this because this is bad. I don't know.
I understand that.
It does create a bar. It does create taste. Well, anyway, but...
Yeah, I mean, the problem with that is, like, I understand he wasn't hated. He was beloved. And that's the problem. Like, he knew he was powerful, and he used it, if you ask me, completely unresponsibly. And I don't like the guy. I feel like whenever I listen to one of his old radio programs, I'm like, what did people see in that?
Mm-hmm.
In the 40s, man.
People now. How about just people? Because.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we're going to move on. All right. Let's see. Would you rather, this is a hard turn, get a tattoo across your chest that says, I eat ass, or get a tattoo across your chest that reads, please eat my ass? There you go.
Well, first of all, I have a fear of needles, so that's not a...
That's happening either way.
Yeah, if it's going to happen... Oh, I don't know. I'm not going to get too personal. I've never done either. I think it's the second one, though. Like, I don't know. I'm a picky eater. Like, I don't eat most vegetable because I don't like the taste. I don't think I'm going to be good at eating ass.
It could, hold on. You know. Sorry, start coughing. You don't have to deliver on these things. I mean, you can, but it could be a lie. You know, this is a big tattoo across your chest that's just stating, you know, and like whether or not someone's like, well, your tattoo says, you know, you'd be like, well, I know, you know, like you could, or like I'm saying there. It's a lie.
I mean,
it may not be a lie. I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, the point is, like...
I mean, the thing is that I am advertising it at that point. It creates a sense of anticipation. And exactly. I don't, like... I'm a people pleaser. I will not disappoint people.
You're really going to be pleasing them, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's the second one, mostly because I know I'm a picky eater. And as I said, like, for example, I don't think outside of potatoes, lettuce, and cucumber, I eat any vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the occasional carrot, but...
Wow.
The reason I look the way I do and have all the health problems that I do is because of that very, very, very unhealthy diet.
What about peas? Peas are pretty...
I hate the texture. I genuinely do.
Man, broccoli? Oh, everyone hates broccoli. Never mind. Everyone hates broccoli.
Yeah.
All right. I won't list all the vegetables. I like vegetables. All right.
That's the problem. I don't like them, and I refuse to eat them. I don't think I'll be good at eating gas, because if for one second, I might like it. I'm not going to lie. I will try it once, and if I like it, great. But if I don't, then what? Like, please eat my ass doesn't exclude me from eating ass. But I eat ass excludes me from please eat my ass. You know, I'm thinking economically here.
I don't think it does. I think both are like an open, you're opening up a conversation anyway with that tattoo. I think both were like, well, if you don't, do you? Or do you like, I think both. But all right,
I get it. No, I get it.
All right.
The thing is that again, I don't know. I first of all, we are getting a tattoo. At that point, I am completely over the fact. I really hate needles. Like genuinely, I have a fear of needles. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I feel like please eat my ass is. First of all, more polite.
Because you're saying please.
Yes, I am saying please. Like I eat as, it's not like I eat as if you want me to. It sounds a little bit more aggressive. And I am an incredibly passive guy. I have zero aggression in me, I feel like. I know I look big. I am big. I am 193 centimeters tall. I'm sorry, I don't know how that is in imperial, but...
Let me get my. Okay. I'll do the guy. I know it's. I can imagine centimeters, but when you say over like anything like 10 centimeters, like wait, hold on, 100 and how many?
193.
Oh man. Okay. Cool. It actually popped up. Oh, okay. You're 6 foot. Like almost four. Okay. Yeah. You're pretty tall.
Yeah. And I am. Big, like physically I look big, but I am not an aggressive person. I am incredibly passive. I'm more akin to a panda than a grizzly bear.
Gotcha. Okay, I know I'm changing the rules a little bit here, but I wanna ask you this. What if please was removed from the tattoo? What if it was just eat my ass then? Just about, and then you know that's less needle for you because that gets rid of a whole word.
That is true.
It's more of a commandment now. Like, are you still picking it?
I still take it my ass. I feel like it can be more used in more conversation as well. If someone says, like, for example, I don't like the movies of Sergio Leone, I can be like, yeah, well, eat my ass.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's actually smart. Yeah, it doubles as an insult.
Yeah.
Now, it's actually way more useful, yeah.
Now, you know, I know you said that if you ask the question, you don't have to answer it yourself. But now that you've removed please, it's technically a new question. What is your answer?
Oh, man. Yeah, see, I was hoping to skate out of this one. And you called it out. Man. Because I don't like to, I mean, I don't have any tattoos right now. I also do not really care for needles. And these are both really aggressive. Dang it. Because I do not want anyone to eat it's not a wish for me. I don't find it's an uncomfortable thing for me. Like I would not like that. But it is a good insult.
Yes.
And the first one is just like a lot of information that may not always be true. So
are you going to disappoint people or are you going to insult them? That's the question.
This would be either of these are nightmares. Tattooed on my chest.
Yes.
Oh man. I mean it when I say I wasn't going to answer this one, but here I have to. Okay. I pick the second one. It's less expectation, and it's more insulting. Because if I brand the first one, it's like, well, then you know, like everyone's like, oh, well, you do. Like, well, no, because like that's not always true. Like, that's I mean, like this is like. It's like, well, like, yeah, it's expectation.
I completely understand.
The second one the second one is like, well, this is a, no, I don't mean it. This is an insult, you know? And like, I'll mean that. Like, honestly, I'll be like, this is an insult. Do not. I mean, like, not literally.
Eat my ass, but not literally.
Yeah, but not literally. Oh man, maybe I should add that. Maybe I should just add like tattoo the second part, but not literally underneath. Yeah, or for the first one, but for the first one, I like to be like, well, we're select customers. Anyway, never mind. Anyway, we'll move on. Oh man, would you rather be able to know always when you're being lied to or always have the best comebacks and insults?
Well, definitely the first one. Like, it's not even
really,
yeah, because I have a lot of, it's sorry, it's a little bit personal, but I do have a lot of abandonment issues and a lot of paranoia sometimes. I feel like, oh, people are not being honest with me. They say, for example, that I enjoy spending time with you, but they're thinking I'm boring them. So I'd rather just know when they're lying and be like, oh, you know, they genuinely don't feel bothered by me. And yeah, it's basically, I think the first one is the best one for people who lack self-confidence, i.e. me, because it just removes a lot of tension. It's like, yeah, they're not lying. Good. Or, oh, they are lying. I was right.
Okay. But I mean, what do you do with the information once you have it? You just kind of, you like in your head, you knew they were lying, but you don't know what the truth is still. You know, if someone says, I don't know, like, I love you, and you know they're lying, does that mean that they don't love you? Does that mean that they hate you? Does that mean that they're indifferent? Like, you know, you still don't know the truth. You just know it was a lie.
Well, I mean, most of the time, I feel like there's a satisfaction in saying, I know you're lying, you liar. But pettiness aside, I feel like that is still useful information to have. If they say, I love you, and they don't love me, and I know they don't love me, I can feel like, okay, so for example, this other piece of information, for example, the other day you say, I enjoy spending time with you, but you weren't lying then, combined with this new piece of information, will mean that you probably don't love me yet. But if you lied both times, well, this is a doomed relationship. It's a collection of informations.
That's smart. Okay. I get it. But I don't know. I picked the second one though, I think. It's in back
Oh.
comebacks and insults. Do you ever leave a conversation going, oh, I should have said that, or oh, that would have been the best thing to say. Like I told them all, I don't know.
I get that too, but if I pick that one, then I have nothing to think about while I shower and get angry at myself.
Gotcha. All right, we're moving on because this is going to be the last question. I want it to be about movies.
Oh.
You have to pick a movie for you to live in forever, and you have to pick a movie for your worst enemy to live in. I don't know if you have a worst enemy, but just pick someone. You have to pick someone you dislike.
I mean, Michael Bay is my worst enemy. I hate him. I'm gonna be
Oh,
frank.
no, he's awful. No.
Yeah.
Him and Snyder share a lot of similarities, by the way.
Yeah.
Gods.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I hate both of them.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be poetic because for my worst enemy to live in, I'm gonna pick a Michael Bay movie.
Which one? Because, yeah.
Ah. Yeah, that's
Armageddon's
the important question. I'm gonna choose Transformers Last Night
a.
because,
Ugh.
yeah, first of all, you don't know what is happening because
Ugh.
half of the time camera is in people's asses. It's
Ugh.
constantly exploding. People are constantly exploding. It has really bad dialogue, really bad acting, and the world is dumb. And I feel like someone living in there will probably have fun at the first hour or so. But after that, the novelty will wear off and they will realize, oh my God, everyone is dumb. How can there be not a single shred of intelligence on this massive
Yeah.
intelligence robot movie?
Yeah, it's awful. It's
Yeah.
really bad. But it's essentially the same world just on stupid pills.
Yeah, that's a big thing though. Like, I feel like that is enough for it to be torturous. And I wish Michael Bay have a very long life in Michael Bay land.
Got
I
it.
want the torture to continue.
Yeah, what about for yourself? If you had to pick a
For
movie for yourself.
myself,
Yeah.
that's gonna be a lot harder. First of all, just off the top of my head, it's cloudy with a chance of meatballs because, of course, it's food raining from up high. But if I want to talk about it like more sentimentally and actually show that inside I have the soul of a dying boomer, it It probably is going to be It's a Wonderful Life. just because. Yeah.
You said you were a traditionalist, and then you picked It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. Because genuinely, and this is true, it's the only movie where at the end of it, I literally cry every time I watch it. At the end of it, where they gather and give George Bailey money, I'm like, oh my God, look at it. The sense of community in that town. All white community, but you know,
community. It's like the 19 freaking, what, 30s or something.
It's literally a year after the end of World War II. It's 1940, I think, 8.
Oh, okay. I was off.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's an old movie, but that's the thing about them. Like, old classical movies are simpler to understand. And my brain cannot handle complexity out of a certain level, especially in interpersonal relationship. Like, mm-hmm. I told you, when I was 17, I used to sit in the house and watch 70 movies a month. That should tell you the extent of my social life as well, because I watched all of those movies alone. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So the time everyone spent to develop social skills, I learned how many movies Jimmy Stewart has been in. And some of them are very good, actually. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance isn't that bad. And like, yeah, because of that, I feel like older classical movies, I understand the people easier because they are written so plainly. Lying hadn't been invented yet. But
movies are lies.
Yeah,
but they were. It's all something that we all know is not real, and we all just buy into it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, from the conception of it, there's a line I really love. I don't know where I read it. It's that the jazz singer, the first talkie movie, incredibly racist, incredibly bad. Genuinely, it's not a good movie. The only reason we even talk about it is because it was the first. But there is a thing. It's not even the first full talkie. The songs are the only audible parts of it. There is only one line of dialogue. It said, wait a minute, you ain't seen nothing yet. And it's like literally a promise from cinema. It's like, you feel like this is the best we can do. Oh, you haven't seen anything yet.
It's a promise. It's like, has it come at the end? Is it like, wait a minute? No.
It's in the middle of the movie. I mean that in a meta sense. Like, it's literally like cinema was saying, wait a minute, you ain't seen nothing yet.
What an old saying, anyway. Just in general, no one says you ain't seen nothing yet. That's an old one.
Yeah, it's not a good movie. Like, I don't want to live in the jazz singer, but It's a Wonderful Life. It's just, I don't know. There's something about it. Like, I like Uncle Billy. I like George. I like, oh my God, Bert and Ernie. For a second, I forgot their name.
You're not talking. You're talking about Wonderful Life, right? Or are you talking about Sesame Street? Yeah. Okay.
No, It's a Wonderful Life. The cab driver is Ernie. The police cop is Bert.
Okay. Man, it's been a while. I mean, I remember, but I think I remember just him shouting their names like, hey, Bert, and something like that. But okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I respect your choices, and they're pretty great. And I'm actually going to copy you when it comes to Michael Bay, because I'm low on enemies right now, so I'm going to pick Michael Bay or maybe Snyder.
Great.
I pick Snyder. Okay, I pick Snyder, and I want him to live in whatever. Actually, last night, you picked the worst of the best. The best of the worst. And,
yeah.
And, man, I had a movie for me to live in, and I'm forgetting it. I had it in my head. It was, a movie where, dang it. You know, this is the worst time to have something leave your mind.
I understand. If you describe it, I might know it.
Oh, no, it's not even the name. I had it fully in my head.
Oh.
And when you don't think of it, it comes back. And this episode's gonna end, and I'm gonna be walking through my house, and it's gonna hit me, and I'm gonna scream, and to the, oh no,
You can edit it in.
what movie was it? Oh well, it was like a calm movie where you can like, I think there were superpowers in it somehow, but like you didn't have to have them.
A car movie with superpowers?
Calm movie.
Oh, calm. Superpower. I'm going to the list in my head.
At first I was thinking like Incredibles, but then I was like, no, that's a bit much. And then,
Isn't it? Do you mean Unbreakable?
no, not
The M. Night
Unbreakable.
Shyamalan movie?
No, not Unbreakable. It was, I was, because I wanted there to be some type of like, oh, there are superpowers in this movie, but you don't have to. There was something matched. Oh, dang it. Oh, well. I gotta, maybe I'll add it in afterwards and I'll, and you know what? You'll be like, okay, give me your reaction to say, oh, that's a great choice or something like that.
Let me.
Okay. Star Wars. You can have the force, just stay out of the politics.
Oh my God, yeah, that's a great choice. Like, that's a Oh my God, why didn't I think of that?
Thank you. Yeah, no, I was it was in my it was in my head, and I was like, oh, this is perfect. It fits all the criteria. And all right. We're gonna end it there. Dang it. Thank you guys so much for listening to A Thousand Crazy Questions. Yeah, I'll leave one of the spotlight to you if anything you wanna if there's anything you wanna plug or to listeners in general.
Well, I know I just spent quite a bit of time slagging off critics and reviewers, but I do make video essays also. I have a very small YouTube channel which I haven't uploaded to in a year, but I am trying to get back to, and I actually do. I'm writing a script for the next video right now. It's called AK88 Studios, which are my initials, Ali Kamsa, and 88 is the year I made my email. It's not 1988, it's 1388 because Persian calendar is different.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah, no, I was like, huh? Okay, yeah.
I'm actually, I don't know if I mentioned it or not, I was born in 1997. I am not that old. But
That's funny. Yeah, I'm glad.
go ahead.
No, I'm glad you clarified because I was like 18. Like you say, he made his email in 88. I was like, whoa, okay.
No. It was 1388, and for some reason, I decided that when I made my email, I should put the year that I made the email, but I should put it in Persian calendar, and then go on the rest of my life explaining to people, no, I wasn't born in 1988. I make videos about like movies and media in general. My most recent video, when you go there, is a 4-hour one about 30 movies that correspond to the song "We Didn't Start the Fire" by Billy Joel. I just took each of the names that he shouts as a prompt and watched the movie based on them, just the first 30 of them. And hopefully, the second episode of that will be done editing soon. I'm editing that as well, but I've put it on the back burner a little bit because I was feeling extreme burnout from it.
Yeah, no, I understand. Editing takes a lot out of you. And yeah, thank you for listening to That's Crazy Questions, listeners. Podchaser, I think I mentioned at the top, is a place where you can find new podcasts and get hooked on ones like this. Please rate and follow on all those good spots. Let me know in the comments or by email if you have any questions to add to the list. And yeah, share this with your friends, share this with your enemies. Everyone stay safe. Bye. As always, I'm a music producer D800 D-800 at BeatStars or SoundCloud.com.